Thank you for that warm and totally unexpected applause. I assume, however, that part of it is for our guest. But I'm an academic, and so... Okay. Αξιότιμε, κύριε Πρωθυπουργέ. Κύριε Καραμανλή.
Keep up the good job.
Okay. Σεβασμιότατε. Κύριε Υπουργέ Οικονομική Γιώργο Αλεγκοσκούφη. Κύριε Υπουργέ Εξωτερικών Δώρα Μπακογιάννη. Κύριε Υπουργέ Θεόδωρο Ρωσόπουλε. Κύριε Πρισβέτες. Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the annual lecture of the Hellenic Observatory here at the London School of Economics. The Hellenic Observatory exists to promote contemporary Greek studies. Consistent with the mission of the London School of Economics, our focus is the social sciences, and especially politics and economics. We promote research on Greece, on its position within Southeast Europe, and its relations with the European Union. Alongside this research, we've developed an extensive program of public activities. We regularly host conferences, public lectures, and seminars on Greece, both here at the school and in Athens. In our work, we seek to build bridges between our university communities, between policymakers, and between those in public life. Our program of public events has grown. Since 2002, when I arrived at the school, and before this evening, we have attracted well over 7,000 guests. Pano apo epta heliadas kalismeni. I wanted that point to get across. More than 7,000 guests to our public conferences, lectures, and seminars. Our audiences are indeed increasing. I'm tempted to say that this evening, now for the Hellenic Observatory, we regard this as a rather small, intimate seminar. We're used to a large audience, and this is par for the course, consistent with our track record. In reality, of course, tonight is the annual lecture of the Hellenic Observatory. A lot of effort goes into organizing an event like this, so before I proceed, on your behalf, I would like to thank all of my colleagues here at the school who have helped to organize tonight's event, to thank them for their commitment and their professionalism, and in particular to thank my colleague Spiros Economides for his efforts on tonight's behalf. In reality, it is the annual lecture of the Hellenic Observatory for this year. We've had a tradition of hosting prominent speakers in this series. Last year, for example, we hosted the Ecumenical Patriarch, Bartholomaeus. A little while ago, we had the pleasure of hosting the lecture by George Alagouskoufis. After the lecture, he became Minister of Economics and Finance. In a parallel event, Mrs. Dora Bakoyanni gave a lecture for us on the 2004 Olympics while she was Mayor of Athens. She later became Foreign Minister. So, I'm rather puzzled, in truth.
No predictions.
I was going to say that I'm rather puzzled as to how our speaker was able to become Prime Minister without giving a lecture at the London School of Economics. Perhaps we assume too much. In reality, of course, Costas Karamanlis is one of a rare breed, a prime minister who's actually studied political science. He was a student at the Athens School of Law and then a postgraduate student at Tufts University in the United States. Indeed, he was awarded his doctorate for a thesis on the foreign policy of the former Greek prime minister Venizelos in the crucial historical period of 1928 to 1932. And given that our Greek chair at the London School of Economics is named after Venizelos, we hope that you will feel very much at home. Clearly, politics runs through our speaker's veins. He's the nephew of the late Greek Prime Minister with whom he shares the same name. It was his uncle who instigated a major program of public works in the 1950s and who led his country back to democracy in the 1970s. Next year sees the centenary of his late uncle's birth. Given his family tree, I guess it was inevitable that our speaker would enter the world of practical politics rather than pursuing an academic career. In 1997, he became the leader of the New Democracy Party, and in March 2004, he became Prime Minister. His predecessor as Prime Minister, Kostas Tsimitis, had embarked on what he termed a modernization program. Similarly, the current government champions its program of economic reform, economic modernization, introducing greater flexibility and market freedom. If there is a consistent theme of recent Greek politics, it is perhaps of a growing consensus as to the need to reform the state and its relationship to the economy. The all-style statism has few supporters today, with its inefficiency and occasional corruption. The challenge appears to be how to achieve the reform on the basis of a growing consensus. In parallel to the economic agenda of the Greek government, the European Union, for its own part, has established its programme of economic liberalisation mixed with social solidarity. But again, there is a debate as to what the Lisbon programme means and whether the European Union has the capability to implement it. The title of tonight's lecture, which I'm hoping is behind me, it is indeed, the title of tonight's lecture clearly connects these two debates, the domestic and the European, a debate on what should be done and a debate on how it should be done. The topic fits very well our programme of lectures here at the school, coordinated with the Financial Times. We look forward to the lecture, and we look forward to the questions and answers afterwards. But first, to give this year's annual lecture of the Hellenic Observatory here at the London School of Economics, please give a very warm welcome to the Prime Minister of the Hellenic Republic, Kostas Karamanlis.
Thank you, Dean, for this excellent introduction, but let me say that I will try it in English. Ladies and gentlemen, dear friends, it is truly a great pleasure for me to address the faculty, the students, and the guests of this prestigious institution. The LSE has for many years been providing education of the highest standard at undergraduate and graduate level to hundreds of Greeks, people who then moved to undertake important positions in business and public administration, in politics and academia. Actually, a good example has already been mentioned, at home and abroad. Moreover, I would like to stress the important contribution of the Hellenic Observatory in better understanding modern Greece. Since it was founded in 1996, the observatory has been gradually evolving into a prominent research center for the analysis of economic, social, institutional, and political aspects of Greece. I'm convinced that the program shall continue to flourish and provide us with valuable research insights. Ladies and gentlemen, next spring we will celebrate a milestone anniversary for the European Union. Half a century since the Rome Treaties, the Union has proved to be a unique historical example, the most successful model for peace, prosperity, and cooperation among states. Doubtless, the path of European integration has not been unimpeded. It has often been hampered by introspection, dilemmas, and delays. Yet the tendency is upwards. A number of remarkable accomplishments and significant successes have taken place. The Maastricht Treaty, the adoption of the euro, the historic enlargement of 2004 are major landmarks in the evolution of the Union. A Union of 25 and soon 27 member states and almost 500 million people. A Union of citizens who share similar values and hopes, but at the same time, similar worries. Today, the European Union is at a critical turning point. The challenges ahead, both at the European as well as globally, are new and complex. With the Constitutional Treaty, we sought to address a number of these challenges. Certainly, we respect the decision of the French and the Dutch people. It is a message that cannot be ignored. But on the other hand, we also cannot overlook the fact that the majority of the member states and peoples of the European Union have ratified the Constitution. Greece is one of them, because we believe that it represents the best possible common denominator in order to address modern challenges facing the Union. Besides, in my view, the crisis we are facing today is not an institutional one. It is a crisis of confidence. The prime challenge for Europe today is to restore public confidence and to address the concerns of our citizens. Hence, this is the political direction that I propose. Our vision for Europe should be directed at two levels, distinct at first sight, but actually interactive. On the one hand, a united political Europe with a strong voice in international affairs. On the other, a Europe that will use its potential to the benefit of its citizens, that will be relevant to their needs and hopes, and that will stimulate them to be active and involved. We need to work together with the citizens of Europe for a Europe of the citizens. In other words, the challenge that we are facing today is not only to build a strong union of states, but also a strong union of citizens. For example, our common aim of making Europe the world's most dynamic and competitive economy must go hand in hand with the creation of new jobs, social cohesion, improved living standards, and environmental protection guarantees. But a strong, united, political Europe takes brave steps to be achieved. Greece has always supported a faster political unification and deepening of Europe, which for the past 2 years lags behind compared to enlargement. Beyond the issue of the constitutional treaty, we will soon be faced with a maybe bigger challenge deriving from enlargement. A union of 27, or even more than that, member states, will inevitably have to choose between moving ahead, although not always at the same pace for all member states, or standing still. I believe that those who want and can move forward in the framework of our common vision should do so, opening the way for the rest, operating as a locomotive, of course without exclusions. Some talk about an avant-garde, others about a core group. I have long proposed, and I'm happy to see that this idea is also proposed by other prominent Europeans, the solution of the political strengthening of the Eurozone. This group has already demonstrated a stronger political will for the implementation of a federal project. It is connected by common goals and interests, and it is not exclusive. It is therefore natural for those Europeans who have been at the forefront of major European integration projects, the most important of which being the euro, to move even further. In this spirit, it will not be size and power that will define the way forward, but commitment and participation in the major European projects. it goes without saying that any such project shall be open to all member states that want to join it and fulfill the relevant prerequisites at any time. Ladies and gentlemen, today, questions facing Europe have not only to do with internal issues. Major challenges of our times for the European Union are also global in nature. Globalization is a force strong enough to affect the lives of hundreds of millions of people. The tremendous pace of technological advance has set a new platform for trade and exchange on a global scale. The internet provides unprecedented opportunities stretching beyond boundaries of time or distance. The economic development of China and India is fueling global growth. Their products are invading highly competitive markets, while both countries are providing more and more skilled graduates every year. Moreover, issues such as security of energy supply, environmental hazard, and especially concerning Europe, aging populations pose substantial risks. Last year, member states decided to renew their commitment to the goals of the Lisbon Strategy, the results of which have been slow and disappointing. The potential of the strategy is impressive. If member states implemented the agreed reforms and the Union reached the Lisbon targets, benefits in the coming years would be very impressive. Europe would see its GDP increasing by up to 23% and employment by 11%. Renewed interests resulted in the launching of the Partnership for Growth and Job, aiming at securing macroeconomic stability, improving the business environment, and modernizing the labor market. We also agreed on sharing best practice, monitoring and evaluating the progress achieved. Europe is finally committed to addressing long-standing structural weaknesses. Weaknesses that undermine not only its competitiveness, but also the very existence and sustainability of the European social model. The new Partnership for Growth and Jobs will lead the European Union to the next decade through a broad roadmap of reforms. 2010 should by no means be seen as the end of the road. It is merely providing us with an opportunity to evaluate our progress, address our shortcomings, and strengthen our partnership. The main focus remains the achievement of high and sustainable growth, capable of producing more and better jobs and a more inclusive society. To do so, fiscal consolidation as well as long-term sustainability of public finances are the prerequisites. Promoting openness and improving competitiveness is imperative. Opening up markets and reducing entry barriers, completing the internal market, modernizing employment conditions, simplifying regulation, cutting red tape, strengthening financial markets, and improving transparency are essential priorities. We are coordinating our efforts to create stronger research incentives and spread innovation diffusion, a field in which the European Union lags behind its global competitors. Lifelong learning is a necessity in our times. Modern education and training are crucial to increase employment, especially for women and young people, to reduce social exclusion and to limit inequalities. We need today, more than ever, to endorse a knowledge-based society and to support the creation of a skilled labor force. Shielding our economies from external shocks related to energy supply is also pursued through the adoption of a European energy policy. All these challenges are critical today, but the transition from intention to implementation is not always straightforward, especially when taking into account reform resistance and pressure exercised by specific interest groups. This is exactly why embracing society in every step of the way is so important. We need to explain lucidly the true long-term benefits of change, particularly when the benefits will occur in the future while the costs are immediate. Reforms, after all, concern all of us. We need to promote a mutual understanding of the benefits of moving forward against the costs of standing still. We need to move past the traditional electoral cycle and create a platform of ongoing social dialogue and reform. Ladies and gentlemen, during the last 25 years since joining the European Union, Greece has come a long way. It has achieved major accomplishments, and it has been established as a stable, democratic state in its region and an active partner in the European Union with a stronger voice in the international environment. It is a country steadily increasing productivity and competitiveness, a country that produces, a country that generates growth. Today, Greece plays a leading role in Southeastern Europe, a region of strong growth with large and yet untapped business potential, attracting intense international interest. The cosmogonic changes at the end of the 20th century and the reforming dynamics of the European Union have unleashed immense opportunities for growth in the region. Like the rest of the world, our neighborhood also changes at unusual speeds. In this process, the natural common partner and aid, not only for member states, but also for states of the wider region, is the European Union. Greece supports the European orientation of these states and their integration to the common European project for reform. We develop a bilateral and multilateral cooperation, but we also work together with the Union and our neighbors in order to create a single economic, commercial, and energy space in Southeastern Europe. We apply policies and we promote infrastructure that upgrades the geopolitical role, brings major investments, and guarantees rapid growth in the entire region. Already, a powerful network of business, commercial, and tourist collaboration has been developed that boosts the dynamism of the region. So far, Greek investment in Southeastern Europe exceeds 12 billion euros, and 3,500 Greek-owned companies and 700 bank offices are established. Today, the Greek economy is more open and more competitive than ever. It has one of the highest GDP growth rates in the Eurozone. Total exports increased by 13% in 2005 and 22% in the first half of 2006. In the same period, total investment increased by 10%. In the first 8 months of 2006, foreign direct investment increased almost tenfold compared to the same period last year, reaching more than 3.5 billion euros. Large investment projects, especially in tourism and energy, delayed for years due to slow and unclear bureaucratic procedures, have now been advanced decisively. Indicative of the improvement is the fact that in 2005, a net increase of 28,400 firms was recorded. Last but not least, according to the 2006 IMD report, the competitiveness of the Greek economy showed a remarkable improvement by 8 places. It was the third largest improvement noted in the IMD scoreboard after China and India. Unemployment is gradually declining. In the second quarter of 2006, it was reduced to 8.8% after many years of double-digit rates. Greece has achieved a lot, but we are still halfway. Following the successful organization of the Athens Olympic Games in 2004, a comprehensive reform package is being promoted that aims at effectively addressing shortfalls. To this end, the Lisbon Strategy is the roadmap that guides our course. the strategy for changes in order to achieve both economic and social results, high added value in our economies, drawing on new technologies, research and innovation, and more rapid growth, whilst respecting the environment and ensuring sustainable development. The key towards achieving these aims lies in one single concept: reform. Now more than ever, within an extremely competitive international environment, we must all accept our responsibilities towards the citizens, towards Europe, and towards the next generations. With as broad a consensus as possible, with efficacy and social sensitivity, we must bring about the necessary reforms and incisive changes in our institutions, our economy, our society. Greece embarked on a period of intense structural reforms in order to adapt to international challenges so that it will be adequately prepared for the future and placing itself at the forefront of European developments and reforms. Our new policy mix focuses on fiscal consolidation, improvement of the business environment, education, and training. The first results are now visible, and we expect to see major improvements soon. One of the main priorities of our new economic policy is to permanently reduce fiscal deficits below 3% of GDP and secure long-term, balanced, and sustainable public finances. In 2006, the public deficit will be below 3% of GDP, as confirmed by the European Commission's autumn forecasts. The reduction of the deficit by more than 5 percentage points in such a short period of time, that is less than or around 2 years, is Greece's European success story. And as affirmed by the Commission's latest forecasts, it will continue in the coming years. A series of growth-promoting measures supporting private sector activity have been successfully introduced so as to boost productivity. We are gradually opening up important markets such as electricity and natural gas, promoting a large-scale privatization program, and reinforcing financial market regulation. New investment opportunities have been created by the reduction of corporate tax rate from 35 to 25% until 2007, as well as a new incentive law. Major infrastructure works are taking place, especially in the periphery, including motorways, seaports, and airports. We have also introduced simpler start-up procedures for new manufacturing firms, adopted a legal framework fostering public and private partnerships, redirected more funds from the third community support framework to competitiveness and regional development, established a new framework for enhancing healthy commercial activity, implemented more than 30 measures in support of small and medium-sized enterprises. The dynamic development of a new energy policy is one of our main priorities. In promoting major transnational projects, Greece is becoming an important actor in the international energy scene, enhancing its geopolitical importance. The construction of the Burgas-Alexandroupolis oil pipeline, the Greek-Turkish and the Greek-Italian natural gas pipelines, the establishment of the energy community of southeastern Europe are major undertakings that will transform Greece into an energy hub in this region. A major priority for my government is education. A national strategy is already underway to improve further the quality of the education system, to promote investment in research and development, to advance the digital revolution, and enhance the links between the research and the business community. Simultaneously, we are improving labor market to offer appropriate job opportunities that will match the high quality educational standards that we aspire to offer to the young generations. Young people like the students who are with us today, who prepare for demanding jobs and expect to have the opportunity to be employed in such positions. Ladies and gentlemen, Greece is in a process of change. results this far show that we are on the right track. We are implementing a series of reforms across the board, which are the result of extensive social dialogue. Preparing our country for the challenges of tomorrow is our main conduit for change. Our vision is to establish Greece as a business and energy hub, a financial and transport center, a leading partner in Southeastern Europe, a cultural and tourist destination. Greece has created a new business environment friendly to entrepreneurship and private initiative. It has created new opportunities for domestic and foreign investors. It has created a new working environment for young, educated people. It is a friendly, modern, and secure society, a country that knows how to listen and interpret the signs of times and how to adapt to them by change and reform, following a clear vision and a targeted plan. As John J.F. Kennedy has noted, change is the law of life, and those who look only to the past or the present are certain to miss the future. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Prime Minister, for that inspiring lecture. We do have some time for questions. There are people dotted around the theatre with microphones, and I can already see 50 hands in the air. Could we have the gentleman with his arm up next to you here, please? If the Prime Minister accepts, I suggest we take three questions together, and then you can respond to those. Please, could you identify yourselves and a question, not a speech, please?
Yeah, I'm Murad Uragi, I'm from King's College London, Department of War Studies. First of all, I'd like to thank the Prime Minister for the nice speech. And second of all, I would like to ask two questions regarding the future. First of all, regarding the enlargement. Did Greece has thought about the future in which Romania and Bulgaria will be also a member of the EU, and maybe Greece would lead a core group of countries to press for enlargement in light of the Balkans and our common heritage regarding Serbia and so on and so forth, and also regarding the fact that nowadays enlargement is not such an issue. And second of all, regarding energy, did you also think about the future, about the way Greece, leading a group of countries like Bulgaria and Romania, need to bridge the gap between Russia and the EU in light of the new, let's say, geopolitical games played by Mr. President Putin? Thank you a lot, Doctor. Thank you very much, Your Excellency.
Thanks. Could we pass the microphone to the gentleman in the centre?
Yep.
I can hear that.
Yes, Dimitris Papadimitriou from the University of Manchester. Prime Minister, you've been a member of the Greek Parliament for nearly 15 years now, and Prime Minister for three. Looking back at this time, if one was to ask you, which was the single most puzzling aspect of Greek public policy you had to deal with, which one would you say stands out? If, for example, we ask you, looking back at the past 3 years, or perhaps the past 15 years, which aspect of Greek public policy you feel defeated you because we simply didn't understand it well? Either you or the Greek society didn't understand it well. Which one would you say it is? Thank you.
Thanks. Could we take the gentleman in the blue shirt here, please? And then if you could respond, actually.
Andrew Desmore, Member of Parliament. Dr. Camries, you said at the start of your talk that it was very important that we took the people with us, and you mentioned about the problems of the immediate costs of political change against benefits in the future. I'd like to ask you about, in the context of energy policy, and in particular your desire to make Greece an energy hub for the region, what are you doing to try and raise the awareness of the Greek people as to the risks and problems of climate change in the context of energy policy, and what are your answers to the very real demands of climate change, particularly as it poses such a real threat to Greece's economy in the long term?
Okay, thank you, Prime Minister.
Well, thank you. A brief comment on enlargement. I don't want to get the wrong message across. What I said about the necessity of deepening Europe and taking bolder steps in the direction of gradually political unification does not stand against our policy, which is favoring future enlargements. We are prepared to welcome Romania and Bulgaria in the very beginning of 2007, and actually we played a very active role in supporting this course and this decision. And of course, we apply the same policy towards all our neighbors, particularly in reference to the Western Balkan countries. And this we do with a very clear vision. We believe that that corner of Europe, southeastern corner of Europe, characterized historically, traditionally as the powder keg of Europe, with all the frictions, instabilities, conflicts, in up to our recent history, being the main identities of that part of the world, can be changed into a European neighborhood. When I say European, I'm not speaking geographically, because geographically it has always been, but in terms of adopting, assimilating, applying European standards, European values, European ways of conduct. And to do that, all these societies have to be assisted in their effort to stabilize their political systems, to stabilize their new economies. The dramatic experience of changing what was a very regulated society, if not totalitarian, to change it into free and open societies, free and open economies, and at the same time giving them a clear vision. I think that the enlargement, the big enlargement of the 10 new members a few years ago, was a major stabilizing factor for that part of the world, which used to be called Eastern Europe. And the same, in our understanding, applies to our northern neighbors. So, of course, all of these countries will have to fulfill the requirements, the conditions set by the European Union, but the light has to be switched on for them. But they will be part of the family when they are ready to be there. Now, on energy, this is one of the subcategories of our policy towards our neighbors. I already mentioned the close cooperation we have with all our neighbors on that score. The Burgas-Alexandroupoli oil pipeline has been moving again after more than 10 years period of stagnation. We are working together with our neighbors, the Turks, to create the gas pipeline across our border. You mentioned geopolitical games. I wouldn't try to deny that. I guess any country would be using its advantages in order to promote its interests. That's a common denominator. I don't think we've got to get into a very detailed discussion to agree on that. But on the other hand, I think that countries such as Greece or Bulgaria, which are involved in a specific project of the pipeline, have nothing to fear. I mean, that's a very open agreement we have with the Russian government. The project serves all of the involved parties. So I wouldn't see to it any shadowy factors of influences of the traditional sense. I think that when a free and democratically elected government believes that it serves the interests of its people, it moves ahead and it negotiates with that given fact. And I think here we have an agreement by three governments which serves us all well. Now, what was the most puzzling aspect of Greek politics that I'm not sure that I can remember something which was extremely puzzling, but this leads me to respond to you in a very spontaneous way, saying that what puzzled me is the fact that although I think that Greece is, broadly speaking, a success story throughout the 20th century, Nonetheless, in the post-1974 period, after the traumatic experience of the dictatorship, Greece had two major successes. It established a very satisfactorily working parliamentary democracy, which is a major feat if one considers the historical precedents of previous centuries or even the first decades of this century, and the fact that it joined the European family. On the other hand, however, and this is a puzzling aspect, I think that we did lose momentum in being effective, efficient, productive, competitive. And I think that this is our challenge today. If not only today, I would say that this is the major challenge for our generation.
Thank you. Let's take
and
some...
And finally,
I'm sorry.
Climate change and energy. Well, let's begin by the minimum denominator that we should all agree, and Greece does it, to respect what we have agreed upon. Kyoto, for example, or the further steps to be taken. A. Now, of course, this is not enough by itself. What we do, for example, is that we are applying a policy of strong promotion of renewables, solar energy, wind farms, which are already picking up in Greece, but we strongly and actively support it in order in the nearest future to give us with an ever-increasing percentage of our energy needs.
Thank you. Can we take the lady with the scarf towards the front of the upper circle, please? Again, we'll take three questions, if that's okay.
Hello, I have two questions. The first is, you said you support Western Balkan countries on their way to Europe. How does this fit into your statement that you will veto Macedonian entry in the European Union? And the second question is, how does Greek treatment of the Macedonian minority, the denial thereof, and the continual failure to provide fair trial for Macedonians in Greece fit into European Union principles of respect for human rights and minority rights?
Thank you. If we take a second question with the gentleman down here. Here, please. The blue shirt.
I'm a Greek Air Force officer in the Royal College of Defense Studies. Mr. Prime Minister, as you mentioned, after the collapse of Soviet Union and the cosmogonic changes, we have seen what we called before Eastern Europe, now to call Central Europe. So the question is, where do you see the end state of European reform? At what do you see the Europe after 30 or 50 years?
You mean in dimensions, geographic dimensions, or in terms of political internal development?
In terms of dimension.
Geographic. Could we take the gentleman, I'm really making you move, but the gentleman with the arm up here. Thank you.
George Saravellis, Cambridge University. I'd like to ask a question about the government's university reforms. Why do you think students protested so much before the summer? Why did the government back down on the university reforms, and how do you expect to implement them going forward? Thank you.
I promised you a set of very easy questions. Take them in any order you wish.
Let me take note of it, because I just turned 50 and I mean, my memory doesn't operate as it used to. Okay, former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, as I guess many of you know, we do we do support this country's European perspective, as of all other neighbors, and actually we are in pretty good terms as far as our cooperation with that country is concerned. We are, if I recall well, number one trade partner, investment partner, a very strong tourist orientation of the people of this neighboring country. Of course, there is a serious issue remaining to be solved. It's the, I guess, internationally known question of the name, which I won't get into very specific details now because of the historical sensitivities it has, I guess, for both countries. And we are in the process of a continuing discussion and negotiation under the auspices of the United Nations. Now, I don't want to trouble you with many details, but I would say that Greece has already made major steps in showing its reconciling attitude. We expect that the government of our neighbor will respond in kind to that. Hasn't done up to now. Remains intransigent in its initial positions. As far as the second part of the question is concerned, I would say that Greece is a very open society, it's a very free democratic state, and everybody is very free to express his views. So I would say that this kind of rhetoric, if I may say so, does not apply to Greece. Now, geographical dimensions of Europe, that's a big question. I mean, we could be talking about that for hours and hours and again not agree. I understand what it implies. Broadly speaking is, well, if someday a country in Central Asia comes and says, well, friends, since you've been enlarging and enlarging, could we could we join? And of course, there would be a problem. On the other hand, I would like to bring to you across a specific political message, as I understand it. I would be very reserved in giving you the impression that Europe has a very strict and unmoving barrier. But up to here, that's Europe. And after that, God knows what it is. I would say that the factors which I would prefer to help us define what is European or not has to do more with values, ways of governing, ways of making economic decisions, ways of respecting or not human rights, ways of dealing with conflicts. For example, I would say that it is a very, in the heart of the European values, that nobody threatens or uses the threat of military violence in order to address a certain question of disagreement. So, considering also the fact that Europe, with all its shortcomings, I mean, we all grumble against Europe, all of us. Others because it's too much Europe. Others because it's too little Europe. Others because we delay in making, you know, decisive steps forward, etc., etc. But still, remember what a tremendous positive influence the European project has had and still has. Remember how it used to be between the French and the Germans, to go back. Remember how it could have been in what you mentioned, Central Eastern Europe, after the dramatic political changes. So, in that sense, I would say that Europe at least should not jail itself in a concept that, I don't remember if you recall an expression, Fortress America. It used to be an expression signaling a specific attitude in American foreign policy. So I'm using the parallel. I don't believe in Fortress Europe in terms of geography. I believe of the beneficial influence Europe diffuses all around. And in that sense, I understand that that cannot go on unlimitedly, but I wouldn't try to restrain it too much. Now, university reforms, that's a question of importance in the sense that it has a very great interest in active Greek society. You used an expression, the government backed down. That's not the reality. Let me explain to you my perception of it. I already mentioned, and I guess everybody agrees, particularly in this community and environment, that education is a very major parameter for our societies today. Used to be always, but now it is even more so. Let me give you just one example of what I have in mind. Today, education is not only a factor of creating better citizens or giving just the tools to younger people to be able to join the labor market, whatever. But it is also becoming the major wealth factor. And at the same time, the major criterion between the blessed and the unblessed, the privileged and the non-privileged, both at the level of entire societies, as also at the level of within the society. So it is of a paramount importance. Being it of such an importance, my philosophy is you need to explain to everybody what you're trying to do. And at the same time, try with as much success as you can to encompass the maximum possible consensus. Not because of political fear, that's my response to the expression backing down or backing off, but in terms of solidifying the reform. We are very much decided to move ahead with it, but we can spare some time in order to deepen the dialogue and ask everybody to come up with his own ideas and proposals. I'll be very, very frank with you. I haven't seen that, at least not to the extent I hope to. What I see is essentially a replica of what JF Kennedy said, or was used by me as a quote at the end of my communication with you. It's not a proposal, and it's not a policy to say no change at all. Let things as they stand. But we all agree that things as they stand, or most of us agree, are not at a satisfactory level. So we've got to move ahead. What I'm saying is I don't want to impose my own views. I want to achieve the maximum possible consensus, because that's a change, that's a reform which is not connected with the term of one government. It's a reform that has to be stable and for good. Education policy should be planned with a 20 years perspective, not a 4 or 3 years perspective. And I'm sure you understand what I'm trying to say. So, getting back to the gist of my answer, we are, and personally I'm fully decided that this reform shall be implemented. But on the other hand, I will try my best to induce and encompass at the maximum level a sense of the broadest possible social consensus.
One more round. Okay, let's take our final round of questions then, please. Is the gentleman at the back with the white card in his hand? Yeah, the gentleman with his hand, two hands in the...
Hello. My name is Armin Muja and I come from Kosovo. Mr. Prime Minister, I was very impressed by your very optimistic address to this audience, and I tend to agree with it. On the other hand, I agree with you that Europe is more than what it appears to be today. It's also a matter of values. We have heard in the Western Balkans, and we have seen, some of us, the lucky people, that these values are very good, actually, and we tend to appreciate it. We appreciate them. But they are too far, they remain too far. You're telling us how good these values are, but on the other hand, you have blocked us. There is a hole now. After the enlargement with Romania and Bulgaria, there are only few there is a very small territory remaining in isolation. And the other question is, what's the Greece approach towards the status of Kosovo?
Okay,
thank you.
Thanks. The lady with the hand next to the camera here.
Okay. Thank you, Doctor, for your very inspiring and charismatic speech. You mentioned the series of reforms, which I think are very important, in education and environment. But I think that the one sector that you missed, which is probably the most important, and if you want to talk about inefficiencies and underperformance, I think that's the healthcare sector. And if you could just mention a few words about that. Thank you.
Could we take the gentleman at the end of the aisle here, please?
Prime Minister. In your effort to execute on an undoubtedly ambitious and crucial reform agenda, how important and how difficult is it to achieve a cultural shift in the society which still expects a lot of solutions from the state? And all this at a time that globalization is driving competition at an individual rather than national level.
Thanks. That will have to be the final round of questions, I'm afraid, and then invite the Prime Minister to respond.
Good. Now, enlargement has not been blocked, as was mentioned. What is true is that there are voices within the European Union which are expressing some skepticism, some reservations about speedy further enlargements. I've got to say that I have an understanding for them. That's not my policy. I think I made my policy very clear. But I have an understanding in the sense that what these people are trying to say is that, okay, it's a good thing to enlarge, it's a good thing to bring all our, you know, other European neighbors, which particularly shared a very traumatic experience throughout 50 years or so after World War II. But, first of all, what's the absorption capacity of the Union at each point of time? Then we have the great pending question of the constitutional treaty, and this is not just something that remains to be done. Essentially, the basic plan was to move ahead simultaneously on enlargement and on political deepening. Now, we moved on enlargement, but we are stand still on political deepening. The constitutional treaty, among other very important things, has at its heart the reform of the decision-making mechanism of the Union, which is very important. I mean, you need a very different decision-making mechanism in a club of 30 than you used to have when the Union, the club, contained only 6 or 10 or 12. So, yes, I would agree with you to the extent that there are people, you know, saying, let's move in a more... slow pace, but I don't have heard from anybody saying that enlargement is dead for good. nobody presents that view. The question is how fast you move. At any rate, if you want my realistic appraisal, is that let's move ahead with the negotiations of all Western Balkan countries. At any rate, none of them will be ready in 1 or 2 years from now in fulfilling all the criteria. But let's move ahead with this process of preparing, if I may say, call it for reasons of simplicity that way, and leave the final decisions of the actual exact timing at a further step. Now, Greece's view on the Kosovo question, if I understood well your question, is that we believe that the solution to be a solution to accepted by all parties involved, a solution that will promote the everyday life of ordinary citizens in Kosovo, which refers to the standards which have not been implemented, at least at a very satisfactory level up to now. A solution which will be European in the sense that it will offer the perspective of eventually being part of the European institutions. A solution which will not be imposed. I'm saying that because I think that this is a question that has to be resolved, but in a manner which will not redestabilize the region. I think it's feasible if all parties rise themselves to the expectations. The question is how to deal with such tricky questions in a way that will promote stability for tomorrow and for the future generations. Healthcare sector, very important. We are moving ahead on that as well. The question here is that you don't have one tremendous reform which will change the picture overnight. You have many, many steps to be implemented in order to move forward. I would, from all these many steps, I would focus in this discussion only on one which I consider very important, that is making our priority what we call, somebody give me the equivalent of protovathmia.
Primary healthcare,
okay. I'm not sure that's the exact translation of what we call almost as a terminus technicus. At any rate, we believe that this is a major change in order to improve the efficiency of the system and the efficiency of the secondary healthcare, which is hospitalization. That's where we are putting our focus now. And of course, this leads me also, that's not healthcare, but it leads me to another major reform, which is the social security system, which already, as a major issue of social dialogue, is underway between the social partners and the political parties, with the target to promote this particular reform, whatever government will be in power after the next parliamentary election. The reason we are doing it that way is because we are talking about a reform which touches upon all the strata of society, and we deemed, I think correctly, that 2 or 2.5 years of dialogue are a period necessary in order to come to the, on the one hand, to the measures which will effectively deal with the problem, but on the other hand as well, to the social understanding of the necessity of this reform as well. Final question, cultural shift, role of the state. If the question implies, as I suspect, that there is a a common feeling among many Greeks that let's not confide very much to private initiative and the business environment, etc., etc., and let's all depend always on the state and public authorities, etc., etc. I would say that this picture of Greece is somewhat dated. Somewhat. I think that there is an emerging social perception that we've got to move away from that. Of course, we won't become a society without rules. We need a state, actually a stronger state as far as its sphere of competences is concerned, in terms of making sure that laws are implemented, for example, or the regulatory role in some sectors of economic activity, or setting the framework of the activities of human beings or enterprises. But on the other hand, I think more and more citizens tend towards the view that the role of the state has been extremely expanded, that it proved in many, many cases inefficient and much less effective as was expected, and tend to adopt a much more free and open society-oriented picture. Now, I'm not saying that there are not residues, remnants of the mentality you pictured or implied with your question. But in oversimplified terms, I would say I'm more optimistic than you as far as this cultural shift is concerned. I think is that it is already strongly underway.
Well, Prime Minister, I give you my personal thanks, but to give the thanks of the school, can I welcome onto the stage the Director of the London School of Economics, Sir Howard Davis.
Well, it's my privilege, Prime Minister, to thank you on behalf of the school. And in doing so, I shall be very brief, because I know that I stand between you and a much-deserved glass of Retsina. In fact, the secret is the school's wine is not Retsina, but it often tastes as though it is. We, as you know, Prime Minister, we have at the LSE a long and warm and close connection with Greece. We have 250 Greek students in the school at any one time, and that number is maintained through the generations. And, of course, we have the Hellenic Observatory, which, as the name implies, means that we watch what goes on in Greece very carefully, and I can say that we've watched the progress of your government with great admiration. Of course, your first task when you arrived in office in 2004 was to ensure that the Olympics were delivered on time, something which you and your government did magnificently. And if I may say so, if you were by chance to be looking for a job in 2012, there may be an opening here for you.
I know who's laughing. Eh?
And of course, since then, you have been focused very much on the economy. But I have to say that in managing the Greek economy, you have a very easy task. Because you have two lieutenants in the form of George Alagoskoufis at the Ministry of Economy and Finance and Nikos Gaganas at the Central Bank, who, of course, are LSE alumni, and therefore nothing could possibly go wrong. But tonight, of course, you talked to us about Europe. You answered questions very openly and very fully. And I have to say, I was particularly impressed by your generosity of spirit in terms of the enlargement of European Union and your willingness to see the borders expanded and extended. And I have to say that although the questions came expectedly from Southeastern Europe, we here are rather reassured, because sometimes we wonder on our offshore island in the North Atlantic with a Prime Minister who thinks we're next door to Texas. We wonder... we wonder whether if we applied today we would qualify, but I think you have suggested that there would at least be one Greek vote still in favour. So we thank you very much for your lecture this evening, which has been a new high point for the Hellenic Observatory, and I would like to give you our thanks. I wondered if, with the questions, I should have quickly assembled a couple of books on higher education reform and healthcare reform written by LSE academics, but no, I have a commemorative plate for you, and since it's a school tradition to embarrass our guests, also an LSE.
Yes.
That's a small token of friendship for